What's up, fellas? This is listener Danny in New York. I don't know why I thought of this tonight, but I was just remembering the story of Oops, the Cockatiel from a couple years ago, and I was moved to write a song about it, so I hope you enjoy it. Oops, the dirty monster, Andrew's enemy, made life real hard, ate credit cards, got its name from scatology. Mrs. Walsh's pet bird made little Andy fret. It stood in all two card decks tall, but shat like George Brett. Power out.
TBTL.
I'm not handling this well. I don't feel competent. I'm depressed.
Yeah, so I just think it's time to kind of circle the wagons and touch base.
Yeah, that's great. You took the words right. We wanted to touch base with you to just dovetail on what you just said and just let you know that we are full steam ahead on our end and we are, you know, we are ready to deliver.
What? You think I'm dressed to talk? I'm dressed to party hardy like an MC Scat Cat.
We have no Scat Cats. We have no Bay Kitties. We do have a pod dog. You ready to do this, Rudy? She's very into what I'm doing right now, not because she's an imaginary radio fan, but because I've just been eating a few Planters dry roasted peanuts. And as is typical for me when I'm eating any kind of food that's like the kind of thing you could grab multiple amounts of, like popcorn or peanuts, I always grab like more than I could throw into my mouth. And so then one or two always falls down to the ground. So it's a great time to be a scavenger dog. But I also wonder, why don't I just take smaller amounts of things? If I know that there's going to be a situation, why not just live not quite so moss? I don't know, people. I just got to be me, I guess. And this has got to be the imaginary radio show that just might be too beautiful to live, also known as TBTL.
Peace and love. Peace and love.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
You got to eat that microphone.
When I'm eating microphones, I always grab like seven microphones, and then I can't get them all into my mouth. I'm coming to you today on this Tuesday edition of the show from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Right before the show, ran out in the yard with some poop bags, which, by the way, just an update on that. I have gotten some extra strength poop bags that do not tear when you try to use them to pick up dog poop. And they're working great. Very happy to report. But I got out there, cleaned the whole yard up. So as I'm doing this broadcast, I'm staring at the backyard. And I don't have that just kind of unsettled feeling I usually have knowing that Rudy's leavings are out there. Everything is shipshape. And we are ready, my friends, for episode 2,585 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
And we have so much to talk about. Turns out, if you have been sneezing into your hand,
you're a gross person.
And you're not just a gross person, you're doing it wrong. There are new government guidelines about how you should sneeze, like when you're in public, when that sneeze just comes upon you and you have no choice but to let it fly. You should not be sneezing into your hand. There's a different part of your body you should be sneezing into, and we'll tell you what that is coming up. Also, there is a major toilet paper shortage in Taiwan, which is a kind of an interesting story about why Taiwan is more susceptible to toilet paper shortages. So we'll talk about that. Oh, and also, for reasons I still don't fully understand, even myself, I dipped my toe back into Twitter last night.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to my Twitter.
I'll probably need to report on that. Since I've made such a big deal about not being on Twitter, it's only fair that I'm honest about the fact that decided to get back into that rotten stuff last night. So we've got that. We've got emails. We've got V-mails. And we have this young man. He is the longest-running Cobro of the show. He's known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, and their splendor. Bought a hot air balloon, but doesn't mean he thinks he's better than anyone else. The Hodor of podcasting. He comes to the show with one essential question today.
Is it too early to get a fish sandwich?
And the answer is never. Not on this program. joins us from the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. It's Andrew Welsh. Hello, my dude.
Hello. Tell you what, it's probably too early for summer sausage earlier, but that didn't stop this guy.
Really? How do you enjoy that? Do you just do you just cut it and eat it by itself? Do you fry it up? Do you add some crackers to the mix? What do you do?
I stand in the kitchen and I get a paper plate out and a knife. And you know how mm-hmm. summer sausage comes with that big, thick, like kind of skin on it that is packaged.
Yes,
in,
which so I find very, very distasteful.
Don't miss the sausage fest.
By the way, one of my least favorite parts about summer sausage.
Wondering where you're going to come down on that, because you do love peeling like plastic skins off of electronics, famously.
Yeah.
You've started a whole thing online with that. People mm-hmm. are, your followers right. are posting videos of them peeling, protective skins off of new electronics. It's almost fetishistic, by the way. It's not unlike, is it ASMR or AMSR?
ASMR.
ASMR. Like, I feel like people are getting the same kind of pleasure from it.
I think that the sort of what we call the platonic ideal would be somebody describing through ASMR the experience of pulling a plastic protective cover off of a microwave that you didn't even know was on the microwave door for 4 to 5 years. And then one day you just looked at the microwave door differently and noticed, oh yeah, there is a little cover. And then you peeled it off and the microwave door, the glass was so clean, so, so clean. That would be, somebody just had a wild time.
Yeah,
I'll tell you,
it was, out there. It might have been your brother Sammy. That's the problem.
Possibly. Yeah, you know, and, moving right along. Listen, and again, in the words of Ringo, peace and love to you, my friend, because there's lots of stuff I like that you're not so into, obviously cheese being at the top of the list, but I don't go crazy for the summer. Now, listen, I'm not missing a sausage fest up here. Right before the show started, I was also chomping down on some Duke's hot and spicy smoked shorty sausages. So it's not that I'm not about the sausage. It's that summer sausage is not my favorite jam on that topic. But you like it. You had some. You're feeling good. Did you do a walk today?
No,
did a walk yesterday.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I should do one after the show.
Did I just make you feel bad? I'm sorry.
No,
that was not the point.
You know what worked out really well for me yesterday was I got up and I thought I was going to take a walk early, like first thing in the morning. So I put on my walking outfit, you know, got a bunch of like kind of athletic gear that I only wear when I am athletic.
For some reason, I feel like your walking gear is going to make you look like the Keep on Truckin' dude from the 70s, the R. Crumb.
Yeah, no, I put on big
bell-bottoms.
Big pair of psychedelic bell-bottoms with all kinds of tapestries sewed into the legs. No, you know me, man. I'm just outfitted this body. Hey, no offense, Roan, but body by Roan. Because, I got the nice walking pants, the couple of layers of shirts you can put on. It was kind of cold yesterday, but it was just, anyway, I do like that.
Is that why you call yourself a BBR on your online profile?
That's one of the reasons. I put on my clothes right away yesterday, thinking I was going to go for a walk right away, but then I didn't. I started doing a bunch of work. You get sucked into things. By the time afternoon rolled around, I was still wearing those clothes. And I'll be goddamned if I'm going to put on my exercise gear in the morning, wear it for work, or puttering around the house, and then take it off. Like, once you're in, you gotta use that stuff. So it was like kind of a psychological imperative. Today, I did not do that. And I should have. That was my plan. But I'm just wearing jeans now. Well, I'm wearing other clothes as well. I mean, it's not
BBE,
just
jeans. Body by Everlane.
Exactly.
But see, again, absolutely, I hope that you take this in peace and love. No judgment whatsoever. But and also, I apologize for like the unsolicited advice. But that's a biggie for me is like putting on my exercise clothes in the morning when I get out of bed because of the exact principle that you're describing, which is once the shorts are on and stuff, then it's like, I'm not going to go work out right then, But if I'm just going to be puttering, I might as well be puttering in the eventual exercise outfit, because there will be a point where I don't want to go on a jog, but I'm like, eh, I'm in the shorts. I got the socks on. If I take these off, now I got to, I mean, do I have to wash them again before I can work out on them? Like, just do it.
And it's just shameful. It would be shameful to take off your workout clothes if you hadn't worked out in them, I think. I don't see. And also, I would not, I do not want to slip into the type of person who is just like, oh, I guess insert a peace and love here too. But,
sure,
you know, there are people, usually people who are way more fit than me, and there's less of a hard line between exercise and life, and they wear, you know, like kind of casual sportswear all the time, whether it's yoga pants or what have you. That makes total sense. And again, the people who are, I usually see like that are people who are fit. So I'm not tossing judgment, but I am not going to be the type of person who is wearing kind of relaxed, or maybe not relaxed fit, but wearing, you know, comfortable workout clothes,
exercise clothes,
but not exercising. You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to just be wearing these things around the house and then going to bed or what have you, or whatever people
I'm
do.
I'm jealous of people who have that that look, because it is very comfortable. But not to make myself into some sort of fashion plate, but it's a little cash for me as well. Occasionally on like a Saturday morning, maybe in the summertime, it's kind of warm, I'll go down to the Lowe's and I'll have like kind of my exercise gear for the rest of the day on. And it's very comfortable. And I see people in that outfit and I always think, man, I wish I was less hung up on whether or not I look too casual, because it looks like a comfortable way to move through life. But it is for me a little relaxed too. So I also avoid that look generally unless I'm working out. But seriously, some people go to sleep in their workout clothes. That's another trick.
Oh, so you wake up in the morning, you're already wearing the damn things.
Yeah, if you're trying to get on an early morning exercise,
sure,
sort of deal, go to sleep in your workout clothes and then get up and it's like one less thing that you have to deal with. So again, everybody do what they want to do, and everybody don't do what you don't want to do. I'm not telling anyone how to live, but I am saying for me, there are many days where I only actually get myself motivated to exercise because I'm like, I already got the stupid clothes on.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
Hey, really quickly, I think the audience demands and deserves an update. Where are you in your cybersecurity training? Did you graduate magna cum laude like myself? Where are you? Or maybe I was summa, I guess. So where are you?
I am a proud graduate of Stock Photo University, aka our cybersecurity quiz system, curriculum, what have you. I have to once again thank my mentor, Andrew Walsh, who taught me how to actually access the system, because without that, I would still be on the outside looking in. I took the quiz at the end. I'm going to hope that nobody who shouldn't hear this hears this. I'm not going to say that I like was paying the closest of attention to each and every video, i.e. I wasn't listening to any of them. But I saw them. I saw the visual, and also they have a transcript. So I looked at the transcripts, and at the end I took the quiz and I got a 95.3. Which you quickly informed me was much lower than your score. So you must have got like a 100 or something.
Oh, yeah. No, I got 100. I wouldn't have given you the celebration horns for a 93. I mean, that's fine. That's passing. But is that
95.3?
Oh, sorry. 95.3. Still, though, I don't know. I just think you're so smart. You just don't apply yourself.
These questions were of a level of difficulty that you could have held me in a small cage in a Taliban facility somewhere in Waziristan for 5 years.
They're thinking about doing that next year.
You could, and by the way, just trying to figure out what email address you need for that is a total B. It's such a hassle.
It's not a Gmail address.
You could have basically, you could keep me somewhere away from society on a limited sleep schedule where you wake me up in the middle of the night to throw cold water on me and, you know, used all manner of disorienting techniques to keep me off guard. You could have done that for 4 to 5 years and then just like marched me into a room and sat me down in front of a computer and asked me these questions, and I would have gotten 95%. They were, I mean, honestly, if anybody doesn't pass that quiz, they should probably be fired from APM.
I wonder if that's what it was. Offense. Like, what if it had nothing to do with cybersecurity? Think about that. What if this whole thing was just a test, just to kind of see who the company's got?
Sort of like one of those days when they say all non-essential employees don't have to report because of the snow.
Yeah.
And just, it's just, you know what? It's the, what do they call that? That movie about the one day when everyone can kill each other. This is starting to get a little
unrelated.
Oh, the
Purge. Yes.
It's the Purge.
Right.
It's the APM Purge. Whoever gets, and what I didn't know is it's the cutoff point is 95%. So had I gotten 94%, you got purged.
What if it's 95.4? I was calling the IT department for something the other day. Maybe it was actually, I think it might have even been to figure out how to get into the system because of the things I was talking about yesterday, the complications with it. And at one point, the person on the other end, this is, you know, APM's IT department, who are great. But he asked me a question. He didn't ask me for my password. He asked me for something else, maybe an email. I don't know what it was. And I was starting to give it to him. And then I stopped and I said, is this one of those traps? Because, you know, they send out traps. Did you know that? Like, they send out, like, the IT department sends out, like, trappy cyber emails to see who clicks on something that would be dangerous. And if you get caught clicking on something that would have harmed the company had it come from the outside, I think you get, like, I don't know what, maybe more mandatory training or something.
It's a phishing exercise. Yeah,
they're phishing
is
us.
Is what that is.
They're fishers of employees.
They've got their spear phishing. That's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
I know all about it, Andrew. Yeah. I got 95.3% on the cybersecurity quiz.
That's so, right. Congrats.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, everybody, quick break. And then when we come back, I'm going to tell you definitively how you should be sneezing, where you should be sneezing. And also, I'll talk about my return to Twitter. We'll do some emails and vmails. That is all coming up in just a moment. This is going.
I think this is it.
What is this?
It's Groovin'. You know that song Groovin'? This is a Willie Mitchell.
On a Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, but you know what I know this from? Oh, shoot. Can I make this transition? Okay, I'm going to just try to do this now. I know this as the sample that is used prominently in the first song on Liquid Swords. Do you want to hear it? Do you just want to go with me on this?
Yeah. Sure. Let's go to Shaolin here. Land.
I think the first is going to start with a skit.
My father was famous. He was the greatest samurai in the empire.
Now, let me tell you this. That skit goes on for about a minute. Let's pick it up here.
They were supposed to kill my father, but they didn't.
Okay. We're already at a minute 11 into the first track. No music yet.
That was the night everything changed.
Sometimes you gotta fast and fast. You niggas don't know where this shit started. Y'all know where it came from. I'm saying we're gonna take y'all back to the source. The knowledge. Yeah.
When the MCs came, telling about their names and to perform. Some had to smoke cocaine to act the same. With the four heat rock.
Hear it back there?
Yeah. It's anyway. Way in the background, though. I guess I thought it would be more prominent.
Man, this song. I kind of hate being one of those white guys who likes the Wu-Tang Clan just a little bit too much. But that song does something to me. When you were whispering about peeling stuff off of electronics before, that didn't do anything for me. But I swear that song does stuff to me.
Then we came to Shaolin Land. I'm trying to think of what my... The problem is, I used to listen to not nearly as much Wu-Tang as you do, but what's the other Wu-Tang record that's not Liquid Swords?
36 Chambers is the Wu-Tang.
Yeah, record. I had that CD. I used to listen to that, but I can't think of any lyrics off the top of my head. But the idea of an all ASMR cover album of Wu-Tang lyrics does have some promise. Let's just keep it moving, because I just about said something hurtful for no reason.
About me? You can say it about me.
No. No.
Okay. Do you want to say something about me? I'm going to stop you. Don't say whatever you're going to say. But if you feel like you now have this kind of negative energy bullet that you need to fire, I'm willing to take that bullet.
No, but I want to... No. It wasn't anything negative about you. You said you don't want to be one of those white guys who, like, loves Wu-Tang, except you are. And I was going to say, it could be worse. You could be one of those people who thinks Common is a good rapper.
Like, Common
That's unnecessary. But, like...
Common had some classic records, but yeah, he is not the test of time.
Here's the thing with Common. We get it. You're wise. We get it. You like have a goatee and you wear a turtleneck in these new Microsoft ads. But like, I'm so not interested in anything Common has to say at this point, because I feel like he's held up as this sort of magical figure of slam poetry now. It for corporate America, that's just so deeply uninteresting to me.
I know he's in those commercials because I've kind of seen them out of the corner of my eye, but I don't know them well enough to critique them. Is he actually talking to a big group of people, or is he just talking to the camera?
He's doing this kind of like spoken word, we can be anything. Something that's being intercut visually with images of like kids reacting to his truth he's spitting, and it's a Microsoft ad.
Okay, so I
and it's just like
it here. Let's just
to me, it's this is the most like this is like this is where it's now at for Common. You're right. Probably back in the day, Common was like a good rapper like 100 years ago, but now he just is like a guy who plays basketball players who fall in love with Queen Latifah, and he just like wears a dumb turtleneck and does this stuff. Can you play it?
Today, right now, you have more power at your fingertips than entire generations.
Now, I want to pause here. This is why I was trying to remember if he was in front of a crowd. No, he's standing on the stage in a giant auditorium or theater.
He's like doing a TED Talk.
Right, but nobody's in the audience, yet it's all lit. Like, maybe he's just doing a sound check here. Maybe the real commercial is going to come and you're going to like it more.
They came before you. Think about that. That's what technology really is. It's possibility, it's adaptability, it's capability. But in the end, it's only a tool. What's a hammer without a person who swings it? It's not about what technology can do, it's about what you can do with it. You're the voice, and it's the microphone.
By the way, I just want to say, of course, this is being intercut with a bunch of shots of people using technology in some way that is improving their lives, whether it's from medical technology to medical technology.
When you're the artist, it's the paintbrush. We are living in the future we always dreamed of. We have mixed reality that changes how we see the world, and AI empowering us to change the world we see. You have more power at your fingertips than entire generations that came before you. So here's the question. What will you do with it?
Empowering innovation, Microsoft AI. Yeah, that's pretty annoying.
Side note, I don't care that it's a commercial. Like, I'm not like, Common is selling out. I just feel like I want Common to get a new move. Other than that, what he just did. Earnestness.
That's
it's
all
so,
he does,
it's
yeah.
So I know, but it's like, you know what? That one song we referenced, I think, yesterday or the day before, which we could never play on this show because it's deeply offensive, probably, where it's like it's him and Kid Cudi. And is Kanye on that?
Yeah, it's the three of them.
Too?
Yep.
And it's like a reworking of Poker Face by Lady Gaga. And it's like a very, again, it's a very sexual song. But Common actually makes a reference in the song to a something sexual. And then he sort of mentions he's like, you know, but they're like, Common, aren't you on that conscious tip? Meaning like, aren't you like not a guy who raps about this kind of, you know, sexual stuff? And then he says something very sexual after it. It's the only interesting thing Common's ever said in his life, as far as I can tell.
Oh man.
I know.
I like the
some
way
of
that
our
you,
listeners
you had to clear your
like,
throat there because
but I love Common. I know, and you can love Common. It's totally fine. I was listening to Counting Crows on my jog yesterday and feeling genuine emotional connection to the lyrics of Adam Duritz. So I can't say anything about any kind of music that somebody else likes other than to say it's not for me. And Common's whole vibe is not for me.
So to be clear, you want to insult Common here. You don't want to insult Common's fans.
Yeah, and I guess I don't even want to insult Common. I guess I want to just say it's not something that – it doesn't resonate with me because it feels overly earnest and it feels like it's just one-dimensional. Like I don't get inspired – I don't get inspired by someone whose entire raison d'etre appears to be inspiring me.
Yeah, that and I think I always say his name wrong, but that DJ Khaled stuff, I can't handle that at all.
That one at least, which it's also not for me, but when it started off, I guess at least there was a bizarre like ironic quality to it, right? Because he's this kind of unlikely looking guy who's just like, you know, giving these like affirmations every day, even though he's like a club DJ or rap producer or whatever. So for a minute, again, I wasn't into it, but at least I was like, well, that's unexpected. But to me, Common in a beige turtleneck doing a TED talk for one about the power of technology, not surprising. It's a very unsurprising moment. And again, I don't know why I had to just, like you said, clear my throat on this. I've just been seeing that commercial a ton. I think they played that shit out of it during the Olympics, maybe. And it's just been like a burr under the saddle of my life. It just keeps happening. And I just keep thinking like, Common, let's just try a new move, please. To which the listeners who love Common are like, how about you try a new move, Burbank, of being nice and accepting and not crapping on something someone else likes for no good reason.
Speaking of,
I should explore that.
I have this tape of you at the MoPop presentation you did with Joe Walsh. Was that like 6 months ago?
You smart. You very smart. We the best. You a genius. I appreciate you.
That goes on for another minute and 20 seconds.
Yes. I didn't even know. I don't know how you got that recording, but that was a private moment between me and Joe Walsh, and I did not authorize you to broadcast it.
You were on stage talking to an empty auditorium.
Yes, in a turtleneck. I don't know why the turtleneck bothers me. It really does, though. I feel like that it's such bad wardrobe. I mean, that's what kills me. That's another thing could this be a topic on ATM if it hasn't already been? Your fine podcast about commercials that you co-host with the longest running co-host of your life, Genevieve. It's called After These Messages. It's a great show. Have you done an episode on wardrobe choices in commercials?
That's a good question. No, we've never done that. Is that something that you think about a lot?
I do. The subtlety of, because you know, I'm no Common.
Mm-mm.
But I've been in a few little rinky-dink commercials here and there, and it's funny how there's like, you know, there's usually something they want you to wear, and most of the time I'm like, I wear it because that's the job, but I'm like, really? That's the best? That's what we're going with? That shirt in that situation? And like, you know those True Car ads?
Oh, yeah.
That are on constantly? Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam Lizagor.
Yes, yes.
Watch some of those and look at the outfits they have him in. Now, he's actually a stylish dude. You wouldn't necessarily know it from the ads. But, you know, he had that fashion podcast with Jesse Thorne called Put This On.
Oh, did he co-host that?
He was the co-host of that. Now, look for one of the True Car ads where they have him wearing a collared shirt that is untucked and exactly falling in the wrong place. And I can kind of see, like, he might have even had it tucked in for one of the shoots. One of the shots, and then they had him untuck it. It's even a little wrinkled around the bottom. Just watch for that shirt and then ask yourself, how did that get through the various layers of wardrobe thinking on that True Car ad?
Well, I thought that was a joke, sort of. I thought that they had him dressed up specifically as a humorous schlub. I don't get those commercials at all. I'm a fan of his, like as a podcast host and other things that he does, and as a Twitterer. But I didn't recognize him in those commercials. Somebody had to say, because Genevieve and I were like, "What is with these commercials? They're just so stilted and weird." And somebody's like, "Dude, that's Adam." I was like, "Oh, okay." But it just seems like an odd use of him because he's such a talented, funny guy. But those commercials are kind of in the uncanny valley between informational and funny to me. You know,
the unfunny valley.
I feel like there's a joke in there that I'm not getting, sort of, and like his awkwardness is the joke and his outfits are the joke. Am I missing the boat on that?
I don't know, actually, because I have not really like watched them, like listened to them. Usually they're on a TV in a Buffalo Wild Wings while I'm trying to watch a football game, and I can't totally hear the audio of what he is saying. But my guess would be that if you talk to the ad agency, if you talk to the ad whizzes who whizzed the smokers that are those TrueCar ads, they would tell you that there's a whole joke about this guy, and it's like it'd be a very like a really rich backstory for this character, none of which you'd be picking up from the commercials. That's my other experience. Like I told you about the time, by the way, this gives you the, in case you wanted just a sort of quick version of the difference in my life and my television and commercial life versus like Adam Lizagor's. I was supposed to be the voice of these local car stereo ads, car toys, which I've told this story many times, but this was years ago, but my agent said they really want a Van Wilder type. And the ad agency had literally pitched a guy who was going to talk about car stereos in all of their ads, who was going to have that essential likable quality of the film character Van Wilder, I believe played by Ryan Reynolds, maybe?
Yeah, I couldn't think of his name. Now, please tell me you told them that you're more of a Van Milder type.
That's a pretty good spoof,
thank
my friend.
You.
So I remember getting the scripts and talking to the people who were putting it together, and they were just so like they had this really specific idea of kind of how this guy was in the world and all how funny it was going to be when he talked about, you know, Blaupunk speakers or whatever, Rockford Fosgate. And then, you know, you get in there and none of that comes through ever. And also, by the way, I did not get the job, which is pretty sad, because it's one thing to you know, sell your soul. It's another thing to sell your soul and then have the check bounce, which is effectively what happened
moment. I didn't sell my soul. I tried to. Turns out they didn't want it.
No takers.
No takers.
But anyway, so I'm sure that character, the Adam Lizagor character, has like they've got a working name for him. And they are just like, they've got all kinds of funny antics he gets up to. But then what happens is you shoot it and then you show it to the client, and the client like doesn't get any of the jokes. And then they cut out all the stuff that was kind of funny and weird. And then it's just him looking, scrolling through an app on his phone, buying a car with a shirt that's untucked and should either be tucked in or should be shorter.
I will say this. We need to thank the donors of the day. I don't want to get you more wound up, but I got to say, if we do a show about wardrobe choices, I think it must begin and end with the Trivago guy, though, right?
Have you noticed he's been coming out of his shell?
I actually don't know what he's saying most of the time, because I feel like I see most of those during football games when people are talking. But I know that there was a huge online backlash when those commercials were new because he's dressed like such a schlub. Like if you guys don't know
who
this guy is,
he's not dressed like a schlub.
Yeah, I mean, Google it. Like there was all kinds of like in the early ones, he was like kind of casual sexy. He's a tall, kind of good looking,
salt and pepper
middle aged guy.
Everybody knows the Trivago guy at this point. I don't think we have to even describe him.
And in the early commercials, they had a casual sexy look, sort of like a couple of buttons unbuttoned on the top of his shirt. I think maybe shoes and no socks, and just generally speaking, a little rumpled, good looking, but a little rumpled. And then there was a big backlash to that. And then they started to change him up a little bit, and they were trying to make him, you could tell they were reacting to it. But now the last couple of commercials I saw, he's like laying on a couch practically in sweatpants. Have you seen that one? Maybe they're not sweatpants, but he could not look more schlubby. And I feel like now they're just leaning in, or they're just trolling us or something.
See, I've never, now I'm looking at a freeze frame, and he did definitely have an open collar situation going for a while. I'm reading an interview with him in Rolling Stone. His name, by the way, is Tim Williams. And apparently he's a big soap opera star in Germany, which is where Trivago is from. But that guy, fashion aside, I feel like they've started to let him, like, there's one of those commercials where he's playing, like, multiple different versions of himself on vacation.
Oh, I didn't see
really
that.
Really gets to show us his acting chops, which is fun and exciting for everyone. All right, let's finally do this. Let's thank some donors of the day. The wonderful, generous, long-suffering people who make this show possible. They donate during the TBTL-a-thon. Some people make recurring donations. It's all essential and vital to what we are doing here, my friends. And these four people today, I'm going to thank them for donating during the most recent TBTL-a-thon. Lonnie Rashid Lynn Jr. Oh, shit. That's Common's real name. Of all the days.
I know.
Of all the days. Did you know that Jamie Foxx's real name, I think, is Eric Bishop?
I don't think so. I don't know. If I knew that, I forgot it. Did you just come across this recently, or?
Well, no, because I'm looking at Common's real name, and then it's showing other people who were searched for what is their real name, and Jamie Foxx's real name is Eric Bishop. And like, one thing, first of all, Eric Bishop's a pretty sweet name to just start with, right? Yeah. Like, I wouldn't think you'd have to change that. I mean, Jamie Foxx is also a rad name.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
For some reason, I forget that a lot of people who are famous actors, they're not using their real name.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm somehow like, it really kind of rocks my world when I find out that as I've been thinking of them my whole life, like Jamie Foxx, his name is actually Eric Bishop. It's really hard for me to wrap my mind around.
You know that my real name is Douglas Steel Eyes, right?
You know, my real name is Trivago Schlub Guy. Also a recent search on my computer. Oh, hey, you know what it's time to do? Start the music over again.
Oh, man. How long is that song? It's like 10 minutes.
Is this also the music for the Trivago ad? I don't think we can completely rule that out.
I think it's from Liquid Swords.
Seems like it could be the thing. All right. Really and truly, let's say thanks to Anthony Mao of Seattle, Washington. Mickey McGushin of Watsonville, California. That's a cool name. Mickey McGushin. Ross Smith of Uppsala, Sweden. Hey, Doe. Ross, how's it going out there in Sweden? And Patricia Anders. I was just going to wait a minute to let Ross get back to me, but then I thought probably should just kind of keep it rolling here. And then Patricia Anderson of Kirkland, Washington. Hey, Doe, Patricia. That's like Swedish for hi.
I picked it up from context clues. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Anthony, Mickey, Ross, and Patricia, thank you very much. Really and truly. Thank you for donating to the show. Thanks for being a supporter. Thanks for helping make this thing happen. Thanks for not thinking that somebody else would donate and then you would be off the hook. Because as I've said from time to time on the show, not to alarm people, but there's not millions and millions of people enjoying TBTL, as surprising as that is, considering the product that we put out day after day, and considering that we are literally the leading podcast for Trivago commentary, other than After These Messages. Literally the leading podcast for Trivago commentary. I feel like you guys, though, actually handle this stuff with professionalism and poise and preparation.
Oh, insults me that you've never listened.
I listened to the one I was on. there's not an infinite or unlimited amount of TBTL listeners. It is, in fact, limited and finite. That's okay. This is not for everybody. But what it does mean is that the people who like it, when we say, hey, it's time to help support TBTL, we need most, if not all, of the people who like it to vote with their dollars.
So thanks to Anthony, Mickey, Ross, and Patricia, because you guys did that. You didn't just think, like, someone else is going to handle this. Because, like, you guys are 30% of the total listenership. And without you, we'd be in real trouble. So thank you very much.
Can I just say, I think of these folks as people who found a USB drive in the parking lot, and we're the USB drive, and you took us home, you took us to work, and you plugged us into your work computer. And
because it was your lucky day.
Because it was your lucky day. And I'll tell you what, some people would advise against you doing that, but we really appreciate that you took a gamble on us.
Yes, that was unsafe. You should never do that again, but thank God you did, because we wouldn't be here without it. So thank you. Thank you, Ross. Thank you, Patricia. Thank you, Mickey. Thank you, Anthony, for making TBTL possible. Today's episode, 2585 in the Collector Series, is because of y'all. One more thing about Common, Andrew, that I've been...
He should change his name to Basic.
Ha! That's a good spoof.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, Top Story. There is a right way to sneeze and a wrong way to sneeze when you are in public, and the Center for Disease Control, along with the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Public Health Association, would like you to know that you should not be sneezing into your hand if that is what you have been doing. That is very bad. That is spreading germs, because then your hand touches things and you get that spit everywhere, which is how disease is spread. If somebody sneezes into their hands, it creates an opportunity for those germs to be passed on to other people or contaminate other objects that people touch. Dr. Vincent Hill, chief of the Waterborne Disease Prevention Branch of the CDC. They say that you are supposed to sneeze into your elbow. They have launched a campaign to try to remind people that when it is time to sneeze, you got to get you. Basically, it's like dabbing, Andrew. Just think of it like dabbing.
This is okay. I hate it when people do this on radio shows, so I'm going to do it on mine. Yep. But I'm a little confused.
Well, ours,
I'm
really
confused. I guess I will consider you a part of this podcast. I'm a little confused by this. I didn't want to say anything to you before the show, because I figured we'd just have the conversation now. Like, this is I know that this is just in the New York Times today or yesterday, but like, this is very common knowledge, and we just had this conversation on the show like 2 or 3 weeks ago about how, you know, you're supposed to look like you're dabbing while you're sneezing, but I refuse to
really?
Dab.
On so TBTL, we talked about this?
Yes. As a matter of fact, somebody even emailed in to say, because I said, it led to this whole conversation about how I will never dab in my life. Like, that is a promise that I am making to the world. And somebody sent me this poster. I'm looking at it now. Maybe I'll make it today's show pick. She said that her at her kid's school, there are these pictures, these posters of like a principal sneezing into his arm and kind of dabbing. He's like a you know, like a quasi pudgy white, he just looks like a school administrator that I would have grown up with, dabbing. So it's kind of funny to see him doing it. It says, "Don't spread germs this winter. Destroy all bacteria. D-A-B. Destroy all bacteria when you sneeze." And
yeah,
he's sneezing into his arm. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I thought this was pretty common knowledge now. And it was just kind of like, are they just trying to get our generation? Are they trying to spread awareness in our generation?
I think that they're trying to get the kids, because there is a Sesame Street video that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services put out at some point. Elmo and Rosita, the right way to sneeze. Can I lay this on you? It's only about 30 seconds.
Rosita? Mm-hmm. Did you know there's a right way to sneeze?
Let's show them, Elmo.
Yeah. Got it. When you feel like your nose needs to give it at you, this is how you act. This is what you do. Lift your arm up high, bend it toward your face. Sneeze right there.
So there you go. They're,
that's a nice sound.
Educating the children of America. Isn't that pleasant?
Yeah,
isn't
no, it makes wonderful? Me want to have kids so I could just hear more of that all the time.
So I look, I'm with you. Like, I feel like sneezing into your hand feels wrong to me. Like, it feels gross. Like, I'm wondering if was sneezing. I mean, they say in this article, you need to stop sneezing into your hand, even if that means breaking a long held habit. I'm like, is that a generational thing? Did our parents sneeze into their hands?
Well, wait, hold on. Like, now I'm confused. What did you? Yeah, well, I was always told cover your mouth. Cover your mouth, yeah. And you know, you think that that's with your hand. I mean, ideally with a tissue, but you're not always holding a tissue when a sneeze suddenly comes on. And so now they're teaching the kids, and have been for like a while now, to sneeze into your, you know, sneeze into your elbow. So what did you grow up doing?
What I grew up doing, unfortunately, was stifling it.
Ooh.
Which was very bad, and I did have to go to the ear, nose, and throat doctor because I got some weird inner ear infection from doing that. So now to this day, if I ever observe somebody stifling a sneeze, I'm insufferable. Because I'm like, you can't do that. Do not do that. You will injure your eardrum and you'll have to go to the doctor.
That's why we were like talking about this the other day. Remember, we had that article about don't stifle your sneezes. Is that coming back
right,
to you?
Right.
Yes, yes.
Yes, but here's what I would like to propose as a third way, and this is what I do, and I feel like it's even better. Sneeze into your shirt, if at all possible.
The front of your shirt.
Like the front of your shirt. This is my move. I pull, like, you know, whatever shirt I have on, I just pull the neck part. I guess it'd be hard for the Trivago guy because it's a plunging neckline of unbuttoned buttons. But presuming you're not that guy, I pull my shirt up over my nose briefly. I sneeze. Is it a little wet sometimes in there? Sure. But I'm taking one for the team. That, to me, seems the most – that's the most you can contain it, right? Like, shouldn't that be the – like, the that should be the number one. That should be plan A. And then if you can't do that, plan B should be to dab into your elbow. And then way down the list would be sneezing into your hand.
So you were always against sneezing into your hand. I just feel like
– yeah.
I just feel like growing up
– get your hand all wet.
I mean, it's gross, but I always pictured the kind of traditional, and again, this is kind of my generation and older, I think, growing up, is like you would see the posters around the schools that would, you know, show you covering your mouth with your fist or your hand, like cover when you cough, cover when you sneeze.
Yeah. And by the way, sorry, but sorry, previous generations, terrible way to cover your cough, a fist. Here's a solid mass of hand that's just going to kind of, best case scenario, what? Some of the cough bounces back into your mouth? Well, like, I feel like that's...
It's kind of the greatest generation thing, right? It's like you're putting a fist to it. Like, you put a fist to Hitler.
We can do it.
Right.
Like, Rosie the Riveter would cough into her fist.
Yes.
I just think if you ask somebody, like, okay, like, pantomime, look, without using words, pantomime what it looks like when someone coughs, they would put their fist up to their up to their mouth. But if you think about it, it's like it's a bad system for containing that. You maybe like a cupped hand or something if you were going to, but yeah, the fist is not a very effective tool either, I would say. There was one more thing I wanted to say about sneezing before we moved on, but now I can't think of it, so maybe that is an indicator, Andrew, that it was not vital information for the listeners.
I'll take your lead on that. Yeah, I read the article, too. I'm trying to think what else dazzled me about it. But, yeah, maybe it's just time. Maybe we just the more you know it. Do you have the more you know sound? Do we still do that?
Do.
Sorry to demand this on the fly here.
No, that's all right. I mean, that's why I keep my own sound effects, so I can play a fanfare when I want, even when you think I don't deserve it.
Well, 95.
And also I can play one of these bad boys.
There it is. I was looking for it too, by the way. I wasn't.
A toilet paper shortage has struck Taiwan amid a pricing panic. Across Taiwan's major cities, consumers are in a near panic over a shortage of one of modern life's basic necessities, toilet paper. From Taipei in the north to Tainan in the south, retailers are having difficulty keeping it on their shelves, as reports of imminent price increases have sent consumers rushing to stores to stock up on the household staple, which in Taiwan is sold folded in packs rather than as rolls. Okay, on that note, there's probably no huge practical difference between the roll and the pack, but that would really weird me out.
Hmm.
And that is just the result of a lifetime of it being on a roll, right? I would not feel comfortable pulling something out of a pack if it was toilet paper. Now, if it was a Cottonelle wet wipe type of deal, that I'd feel very comfortable with. And on that subject, Andrew, I've now crossed another Rubicon with my whole wet wipe, sort of life, if you will. I now bring my own wet wiping materials with me on vacation. I brought a pack of those Cottonelle wipes that we have at our house, brought those to Palm Springs because I am now a person who can't, I don't even want to be on vacation without access to that kind of stuff.
First of all, I am surprised by your take on the toilet paper. When I read that dazzling detail, which I thought was the most dazzling of the story, that's how toilet paper is kind of, I guess, distributed or handled there. I thought for sure Luke's going to love that because of your hashtag Cottonelle lifestyle. I thought
but some dry. No, I don't want some dry ass, some dry ass folded paper towel packs on my dry ass.
I could see myself using that. I mean, it's probably the same type of material. Let's not get too personal here, but I probably use, you know, I rip off more than you need. Certainly. I think I'm a toilet paper waster. Mm-hmm. I will admit that. This might actually make me be a little bit more thoughtful about how much it's like I was mad. I'm such a damn waster. I am really the product of growing up kind of like spoiled in the suburbs, spoiled not just by my parents, although that was true. I mean, they were good parents, but, you know, like I think by a lot of people's growing up standards and hearing about, you know, our Christmases compared to yours, I think I could say that I was spoiled, but also just spoiled with
we would each get three plies of or three sheets of toilet paper for Christmas. Mm-hmm. If it was a good year,
that's what we would get. Each of you, yeah. Whereas I got a new golden toilet every year for Christmas. Mm-hmm. We throw the other one out. Yeah. Didn't even melt it down and turn it into something. Just threw it away.
Spoiled in the suburbs.
I remember just like I grew up going to, let's say you're going to a fast food place or some sort of takeout joint. You could just like dig your hand into that springy mechanism that holds the napkins and just like pinch off 25 of those and take them back to your table. I think I still do that to a degree, but it's harder to take too many napkins now because they smartly, and this is at movie theaters, McDonald's, all over the place, they don't have those springy mechanisms where you can just grab a handful anymore. You got to pull them out one by one by one, like tissues out of a Kleenex box. And that sounds like that's what they're doing with the toilet paper in Asia. So I don't know. Yeah, it might be good.
Yeah, that's actually a good point because with the roll, you just – I mean, you can just give it a pull and it's like, well, however much comes off. But if you have to take them out individually, you have to really consider how many you're using. I really chafe at the social engineering that's going on in our world. And yet I also see the overall value of it. The big one for me, and I've talked about this a lot on the show, is the war on garbage cans. Mm-hmm. And then also the war on just normal ass garbage cans. Like, first of all, I feel like you can never find a garbage can anymore because the thought probably is, hey, if there's an easy place to throw garbage, people will create more garbage. So we're going to just like make fewer of them out there. And then also what you'll never find anymore is just a garbage can that just has like an open lid. It's got some kind of it's like got a slit on it or it's got a round shape. Like they're really controlling what we're throwing in because they don't want us to throw too much stuff in there. Or obviously, like if you're at the movie theater and you have gotten something like and you go over to throw out your leftover stuff or your whatever, there's like four garbage cans and they all have different purposes and they all have different holes to disallow putting the wrong thing in them. And that I know this sounds like a hacky stand-up bit, but I honestly never know what I'm doing with that stuff. Like it's not intuitive for me when they say like this is compostables, this is recyclables. If they have a nice icon that shows me literally a picture of what I'm holding, then I will definitely put it in the right place. But it is not something that is just instinctive to me at this point. And that I find that frustrating, and yet I do see the overall value of it.
I could be wrong about this, but so everything that you said about the kind of social engineering aspect of like, you know, I was in a restaurant the other day and they had four different garbage cans, compost here, landfill here, you know, recycling, et cetera. I'm with you on that, but I thought that some of the garbage cans that have the small lids, especially around the city now, it's harder to, like, if you have a Gatorade bottle, you got to shove it in there sometimes. Didn't, from a municipal standpoint, didn't that start happening after 9/11, or am I crazy?
Oh, I'm sure that's an element of it as well, yeah, because it's, you know, dangerous if you have, like, people can just drop a bomb in a garbage can and then have it go off. So, I mean, again, I know that there's reasons for this kind of stuff. I know people aren't, they're not doing it because it's fun for them. But it is the, like, because, well, this is where it really comes into play. And this is another thing that has come up frequently on the show. I am, for whatever reason, as a person who's not overly tidy, although I think I'm, you know, I keep things relatively tidy, but I'm not like a super duper kind of obsessed cleaner and organizer. And yet I hate getting in the car and having there be a bunch of like old, you know, Starbucks bags or cups. And like, I can't, even if it's a, like a trip across Bellingham, like, I don't want to go on that voyage with a bunch of like leftover, like remnants of previous journeys in the car. That is to say, garbage.
Yes.
It just really kind of bugs me. And my wife, who is a much more fastidious person than me, generally speaking,
that's my wife,
is the kind of person who will let that situation go much longer in the car. Like, the car is some kind of other, it falls under some kind of weird category for her where she's not, you know, grossed out or annoyed by having like 3 days worth of, like, you know, the rolled up bag from the Starbucks when she got the, like, you know, sandwich and then ate half of it and then stuck it in there. Like, that's all fine by her. I am not having that. So what usually happens is I get in the car, because she generally drives the space car. I get in that car and I'm like, I got to get all this out of here. So I'm pulling things out. I got cups. I got bags. I got old napkins. I got a whole situation. And then I'm always walking around like, where can I throw this? And the answer is nowhere, because nobody has garbage cans anymore. I'm the guy who shows, like, I show up at the restaurant, like the fast food restaurant, like the Taco Time, where I'm going to eat. And I come in there and I'm already carrying a bunch of Taco Time trash from what was in the car. And I throw it out. Or like Starbucks, I am often coming into a Starbucks with a massive amount of pre-existing Starbucks trash. And I just feel like less of a loser with Starbucks, because that is an everyday thing. But I don't feel great when I walk into the Taco Time with a bunch of Taco Time garbage and then throw it out and then say, can I have some more Taco Time, please?
Or would you feel better or worse going in with a different fast food garbage? Like, what if you're going into the Taco Time with a bunch of Burger King stuff?
Well, what I've had happen before is I pull through the Taco Time drive-thru and I have a McDonald's cup still in the cup holder from a time when Carrie got some McDonald's. It could have been me, but I'll tell you what, I'm throwing that shameful waste out almost the second I consume it. That's how you know it wasn't my McDonald's leftovers, because that's out of the car as quick as can be. But I've pulled through the drive-thru with other fast food leftovers clearly in the field of vision, and that's not also not a great feeling.
Ask you one thing about this? Because I'm with you on everything that you just said. Like, it's that's less surprising to you, because I am a bit fastidious. I don't like driving with any garbage in the car. And, you know, Genevieve takes really good care of her car. So I don't want to, like, make it sound like she's just lives in a pigsty in the car. But she's not as uptight about it as I am. And one thing that always gets me, and this isn't even about her leaving trash behind, because that's really not the problem, and I'm not complaining here, but I'm fascinated by this. If we are in the car, let's say I'm cleaning up after we went somewhere together, I will find the lids, like the screw-off lids to a bottle of water she was drinking or a bottle of, you know, Coke Zero or whatever it is. Because she is the type of person who, once you have the Coke Zero in your hand and you take the lid off, you just throw the lid somewhere and you don't need it for the rest of the time. When I am drinking a bottle of Coke, I unscrew the lid, I take a sip or a gulp, probably more like a guzzle. And then when I'm done, I put the lid back on, even if I'm going to be taking another sip in 2 to 5 minutes. Like, I'm constantly, uncork, sip, guzzle, recork. Genevieve, just like, she gets that thing, takes off the lid. The lid is now dead to her. She doesn't even see it anymore. Where are you? Does that seem odd to you? Because that seems like crazy chaos Muppet to me.
I am a... I'm a recorker myself. So I screw the lid back on, and then the next time it's time to take a sip. Mm-hmm. Because I think I'm worried it's going to spill or something.
Yeah.
And also, it's just habit at this point. So, yeah, no, I'm definitely – and also, on some days, that's the majority of the exercise I get.
Yeah, it's right.
It's just screwing the lid on, unscrewing it, sipping, you know, rinse, wash, repeat. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, that's definitely I'm with you. That just seems like an unpredictable world of, like, could – you're driving. It's like, is the soda coming out now of the bottle? I mean, what world do we even live in? It's just just feels very dangerous.
She's a chaos agent. It's anarchy in there, I'm telling you.
Exactly. Quickly, just to tell you why they're having toilet paper problems in Taipei. Can I jump back to the sneezing story for 1 second?
Yeah, yeah.
Because maybe this is what I wanted to just get. Talk about clearing my throat. The entire time that I've been, like, thinking about doing this story, there's a right way to sneeze and a wrong way to sneeze, I have had a song running through my mind incessantly, which is Tim and Eric's song, There's a Right Way to Rock and a Wrong Way to Roll. Can I just play this to fix my brain? Because
yes.
Every time I've said there's a right way to sneeze, this is what I've been hearing.
There's a right way to rock and a wrong way to roll. Listen to your soul. Just remember that life is the number one. You can be having so much fun. Just remember that life is much fun. You can be number one.
Listen to that bass. Oh, man.
I've never actually listened to how jacked up the instrumentation is. It's so great.
I actually, you know, I watched some of the Tim and Eric bedtime stories last night. I could only watch season 3, and it was what I thought. They're like 15-minute episodes that it's like one story, but it's always very dark. It's like it's somewhere between Awesome Show, Great Job, and The Twilight Zone, and like, I don't know, who's the Crypt Keeper guy? Like, they're all very, very dark. I mean, both literally shot in darkness and, you know, have all of the kind of tropes of weird darkness. Yet you were telling me that funny skit we play where Tim Heidecker is talking about coming over and having some frozen ziti is from that. And that doesn't seem dark to me at all. So I'm confused as to what the vibe of that show is.
Yeah, as I am wont to do, I went down some sort of Tim and Eric rabbit hole one day, but it was all unfolding via like YouTube, I think. Mm. And so I was just seeing different like kind of like excerpts and selections. And so that one is from Bedtime Stories, but it wasn't particularly dark. But I can't speak to what the overall vibe of the show is myself, because I've just seen it kind of here and there. And like just things that people have put on YouTube that auto-load after I've watched something else from them. But by the way, to all of our listeners, you're welcome, because you will have that song in your head for the next 1 to 2 weeks.
Mm. That is, I mean,
from the Uncle Month, from the Uncle Muscles presents.
Oh my God,
Casey and his brother.
So disturbing. Uncle Muscle is... That'll scar you.
It really is. So thank you, everybody, for letting me get that out of my brain and putting my evil inside you, because now you'll have to think about that. Because that is exactly the other thing I wanted to say about sneezing, was that I keep thinking of that song. No joke. The reason that the toilet paper is very – the price is very kind of volatile is because Taiwan doesn't have much forest and much pulp production. So – like they got to go off the island to get their toilet paper, and so if there's like, and apparently the world pulp market is right now looking like the price of pulp is going to go up, and so it is a volatile time there, and that is all being felt on in Taiwan. The other thing that I was wondering about is, because you know, in Port Townsend, the small maritime village of Port Townsend, Washington, there's a huge pulp mill when you roll into town. And man, does that thing stink. Mm-hmm. And depending on the day, depending on which way the wind is blowing, I mean, there would be times when I would go down to my office where I used to do TBTL from, and I would go into the office in the middle of the day and open the door, and there would just be like a thick cloud of pulp kind of fart smell just hovering in there from earlier in the day. It had like seeped in like something from a Stephen King movie and would not leave. My question is, don't we have the technology at this point to neutralize that? Isn't there something we can do about that? I mean, that just it's weird to me that that's we can pretend to put a man on the moon. But we can't fix that smell.
We can pretend to prove that the earth is round, yet somehow our pulp mills still smell like farts. I don't know the technology behind it, but I will tell you that's the North Country in New Hampshire, Berlin, New Hampshire, known for, you know, that's a whole small but kind of significant town that is built around the paper industry up there. And yeah, you roll in and that whole town. Tell you what, though, you can get a really nice house for a very affordable price in Berlin.
That to me is because, you know, for me, all things eventually relate back to real estate. There's a very cool part of Port Townsend that's kind of out on this bluff looking out on the bay, and there's these beautiful houses, and I don't think those houses are particularly cheap, but it's like, man, it's just like a roll of the dice every day, depending on which way the wind's blowing. Like, you know, you have this beautiful home, it's got this gorgeous view, and on some days it's just a little slice of heaven, and on other days it's just like, oh my God, who farted? Like, I couldn't live that way. In fact, not to give too much away about the location of Burbank Springs, but it is perched up Alabama Hill, and what's interesting is that as cars crest the hill, Alabama Hill, their carburetors emit a carburetor smell that's very sulfuric and just smells like farts. And so sometimes we'll just call it Fart Hill. It is – you can set your watch by it because the cars have had to be – they're accelerating, right? And I don't know if it's every kind of car or older cars or what, but it's like – it's a very repeated, distinct smell of a car's engine like doing a lot of work to get up and over this hill. And what I thought was, man, if you bought one of the houses that's like at the top of the hill but really close to Alabama, the big street by us, like – you probably went in there one day and you're like, this is a cute house. Let's buy this. And then you bought it. And then you went out to do a barbecue in your backyard. And you're like, what? Like, it's a mini pulp mill type experience. It just because I jog like one block on Alabama at the end of my jog. And it is always smells like car farts.
That is so like that fascinates me because I had no idea cars did that. You've told me this before.
I didn't know it either until we moved to this hill. I had no idea.
Well, then how did you figure out? I mean, is there a chance that it's coming from something else? Or did somebody tell you, oh, yeah, that's the carburetor smell?
Carrie was the one who told me that. Carrie knows more about cars than I do, which is, you know, let's be
honest.
That's
my wife.
Some of that's a low bar because I'm just a dingus. But also, she grew up. Her dad is a classic car collector and restorer. Mm. So she just grew up in car culture. And she just knows a lot about that stuff. And she was the one right away who was like, oh, yeah, that's the – I don't know if it's the catalytic converter or the carburetor. I forget which part of the car it is. But she told me that, and I was like – the way that I naturally am, I was like, yeah, maybe. That's my response usually when someone tells me something that I didn't know before. I'm still trying to figure out how what I previously thought was probably still the right answer. So my initial thought is, yeah, maybe.
By the way,
so
it is
probably
the catalytic converter, by the way. Sorry to interrupt.
The catalytic converter.
I just want to make that clear. Yeah, because a carburetor, I don't know much about cars, but I know that a carburetor just kind of regulates the air and the gas, I think. And then I just did a quick Google on it, and it says type of engine. I'm on a website that's all about the type of engine smells, and it's talking about the catalytic converter smelling like farts.
I will say this little tip from somebody who drove many a hoopty in my day, many a stone cold beater. If you run out of gas, as I also used to do all the time, and you then go get some gas, like in a gas can, and then you pour the gas into your gas tank and it still won't start, just drop a couple droplets of gas into the carburetor. Mm. And that will – there's usually a screen over the carburetor. Oh. Maybe new cars don't have that layout, but the Hyundai Excels that I had and the Honda Civics and the Honda Accords, you could just drip a tiny bit of gas into the carburetor and that thing will start right up. Because what happens is if you use up all the gas that's in the line between the gas tank and the engine can sometimes all get used. And then just because you put gas in the gas tank doesn't it doesn't mean that it's actually getting to the engine.
You know,
a helpful tip
we used as a kid was something called, because I had, I was just talking about this in the Hay Dummies the other day. I had a go-kart because I was a spoiled kid. See earlier in the show that I would drive around, and it was hard to start. Its engine was on the back. It was a pull starter with a string, but it was really hard to pull. And it was also just very hard to kind of get to turn over. And so I would take a cap off of something. We had this stuff that we just called it starting fluid, and was just an aerosol can, and you would spray it in there, and then that would, you know, give that little spark to help it turn over, help it catch a spark.
So yeah, that's a real thing. Catalytic converters. And, as usual, that was me trying to say not as per, or per usual, as per usual, my wife was right. And it was in fact the catalytic converters. And I slightly weep for the people when I see these houses going up for sale. I feel like, is it my civic duty to mention to the people looking at the house, I hope you like fart smells, because you're going to get a lot of it living right on top of this hill.
Especially if they're referees, though. Hey, I just want to I got to correct this for myself. According to this website that I'm looking at, carsdirect.com, it's mentioning if you smell rotten eggs in your car, unless you actually have rotten eggs in your car. It's a little cheeky there. The smell is a burning. The smell is a burning sulfur smell, which is a clear symptom of a catalytic converter problem in your engine or damage to the emission control system. However, Luke, this is me saying I might have been dumb. What I said before, it also may mean that your engine is running with a rich air/fuel mixture. Which doesn't that sound like that could also be the carburetor? So before I said no, it's the catalytic converter. The carburetor wouldn't cause the smell, but here it is. Both are right.
But the thing is, you can't smell it in the car, I don't think. I think it's really like it's being kind of expelled from the vehicle is my sense. Like, I don't think it's like these people are driving and as their car goes over the hill, they're like, who farted? It's like, I think it's just everybody else who's outside that's getting hit with the effect of this whole thing.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
All right, Andrew, anything interesting in email town?
Sorry, I sometimes like to hum while I try to get my S together here. What do we have here? Oh, yes, I got a good email about pencils. We were talking about pencils yesterday. Before I get into that, though... Birthday shout out from Christy to her good friend Anne with the plan Lundholm. She is hilarious, hardworking, amazing friend, and kick ass baker. The card is true, Anne. Love Christy.
I feel like we may have to get a different birthday song because it's a little jarring.
You think so? Yeah. Do the Beatles have any songs about birthdays?
Could I suggest this one?
There's a right way to roll.
Yes.
And a wrong way to roll. You can just listen to your soul.
I think we should just use that. By the way, somebody said, or I think a bunch of people wrote in, and so I can't give credit to any specific person, who said we should call that segment Power Shouts. Did I already tell you that?
Oh, great name.
Right?
Hold on, just listen to this bass line.
I I like it right before the solo where you just hear it like kind of they're pulling the strings, just bending the bass a little bit. Can you just go back right to that right before the big bass solo?
Okay, here we go. I'll just jump back into it. I think that's a guitar.
Is that the guitar? Maybe, yeah, it's probably
the
guitar.
I don't know. Okay, so let's listen again.
Yeah, it is guitar.
It's like, I love it. It's like H. John Benjamin is also just trying to like play guitar on his own without any formal training.
So there's your power shout for the day.
Okay, great. I think power shouts is a great name because it encompasses a lot of things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think we should. I will get a. Can you email me that song as a reminder? I'll grab it. So we'll start using that. I think that's the perfect theme music for power shouts.
Okay.
There's a right way to rock and a wrong way
and
to
a
roll.
Wrong way to roll.
Okay.
Just remember that life is number one.
Yesterday on the show, we were talking about an article that we both said might be half bullshit because it was very, very anecdotal about kids coming into preschools or kindergartens and not having the muscles in their hands ready to hold a pencil and write correctly. And they were blaming it not on kids not writing a lot before they got into school, but not playing with blocks and doing more traditional kids' toys stuff. And instead, it's because they're booping around on their their screens and stuff. And that seemed a little bit odd to you, especially thinking, well, if you're booping around, you are using your fingers and thumbs. I thought this was an interesting email we got from Alicia here from Boston. She says, "Ahoy, hoy, your conversation on kids and pencils reminded me of my own experience with occupational therapy. I had surgery on both of my forearms and went through years of OT to regain strength and ability. By far, the most challenging, painful, and time-consuming exercises were the ones that required grip strength, both the fine grip, like pinching a clothespin with two fingers." By the way, everybody who's listening right now is doing that action. They're miming pinching a clothespin with two fingers. I am. And the larger grip, like holding an apple or a soda can. These took a very long time to redevelop. Some of the exercises actually mirrored traditional kids' toys, manipulating blocks of different shapes and sizes, squeezing putty. That sounds great. I got some silly putty right here, by the way. Moving items around with tweezers, a la the game of Operation, etc. I remember my surgeon telling me the need for his specialty, hand and forearm surgery, was significantly increasing as technology became smaller and more touch screen based. Even video games nowadays are less console driven and more mobile and keyboard based, involving little grip. So the moral of the story is make sure your kids squeeze things. Power out, Alicia. And that was the one thing that I just wanted to say, and I didn't want to, I don't really know what I'm talking about, so I didn't want to shoot from the hip, but that was one thing that did strike me yesterday when you were talking about, well, if you're using your fingers to play video games, isn't that strengthening them? But, you know, it's not always sitting down and gripping a Nintendo-esque controller or, you know, an old-school Nintendo-esque controller. You do have those. But as the resident iPad gamer here, I will tell you, that is just most of what I do is just hold out one finger and poke around a screen. You know, there's no gripping. There's no, you know, and it's not, you know, a lot of the stuff I do isn't even reactionary based, but it's less kind of pinching and gripping and punching a bunch of different buttons. It's just using one finger to hit the screen over and over and over again.
Right. Yeah. I'm thinking of like the Nintendo, the NES of my youth,
because
that's kind of when I stopped playing video games. So for me, it's, you know, that's what I'm thinking of. And you're right. I'm sure that there is. You can boop around without actually doing much, you know, hand exercising.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, let's see here. Yeah. Do you want to? How are we on time? Yeah. Let's just go out
with this
shame eating voicemail that I've carrying around for a really long time now. It's from Stephanie, I think.
Stephanie from Brooklyn calling with a shame eating report. Friday. I was sitting at the kitchen table. I didn't go into work that day. My husband had a special day of work where they were doing an offsite, and I forgot. And he got home early, and he saw me sitting at our table eating macaroni and cheese with some beans mixed in, and instead of using a fork, I was using tortilla chips. Over and out.
That is the sound of a defeated individual.
I've never heard of that mac and cheese with beans
combo. I don't think, has anybody?
I mean, but it's like, I mean, why not, right?
Right.
But yeah, that's a new one. I mean, that goes, listen, I'll say it again, and then I'll shut up. The only part about that story I don't love is if she didn't, I'm hoping that that was a meal that she really looked forward to. Like, like she just loves that combo. Because then it's like, you do you. The bummer would be if she was just like dumping random things into a bowl together and just kind of sadly eating them and not even enjoying it. That bums me out. I want people to, if we're gonna eat food that is shameful, it should be food that is just makes us so happy while it's also being shameful.
I guess the problem is sometimes you want to eat something that's really good, but you don't have food laying around the house, so you find yourself eating crap.
Right. See, that's the difference between you and me, I think, is that, and this is actually, I think to your credit, Andrew, you'll just find, you know, you'll go like, well, what do we have? And you'll kind of make that work. Because I grew up not getting to eat out very much, that's always my fix for everything. First of all, I would probably eat out a lot of meals during, you know, other than doing Blue Apron and now making my various low-carb concoctions like I made. I found out about these low-carb English muffins called Mikey's. They make them with almond flour instead of regular flour. They sell them at various places like Whole Foods. They're not bad. And like now I'm making all kinds of stuff with them. I'm making tartines. I'm making like a little like English muffin pizzas. But other than that, my fix for things is usually to just get in the car and go somewhere where they're making food that I can eat, which is a bad habit. I want to get better at just kind of like making do with what I have at the house, which is exactly how that listener found themselves eating macaroni and cheese and beans with tortilla chips.
You know what? I remember when I had I started making chicken fried rice. I think I started doing that. I think I did that after. Oh, God. By the way. Yeah, I think I started doing that after I had my little tongue surgery thing, which, by the way, has to happen again.
No.
Remember last time I went to the doctor? I'm like, yeah. I was super cocky and confident. I'm like, nope, it's not there anymore. He's just going to tell me that and everything will be fine. No, turns out it's unclear what's going on, whether or not they didn't get it all or if it's, God forbid, growing. But yeah, I got to go back. So
wait.
I got in
this
April or something.
This is a weird time to just.
I know. Kind of. I'm not super psyched about it. But, you know, I'll get people
sorry,
get through
man.
Worse. You know, I'm going to get knocked out this time. I even said, like, well, is the spot smaller? Should I just try to get through it? The doctor actually said, no. I feel bad that I told you to do it with laughing gas last time. Like, I underestimated your uncomfort with these things. So, anyway, that'll happen
Andrew,
sometime
I'm sorry.
In April. I'll try to do it right this time. I'm going to have them knock me out. I'm going to take a couple of days off of work. So, I do worry about how much TBTL is going to suffer without me. I hope that you'll be able to scrape something together, but I have, you know, the confidence in you that you'll be able to do
we'll
that.
We'll soldier through, but it's not going to be great.
Yeah. But anyway, so I got to do that. All of that is to say, I looked up that chicken fried rice recipe because it seemed like it was a somewhat easy thing to eat after my surgery. And I also just kind of had a day to putter around the kitchen and try not to think about my tongue. And then I stopped doing it. I forgot. I was obsessed with that recipe for a while. And then I woke up this weekend, Luke, super hungover. Like, more hungover than I had been in a long time. And I don't even have a good story to go along with it. Just went to the Eagles with Camaro Kev. Follow Camaro Kev to a second location. This time it was his, his local bar very well. Luke, I know that you've spent some time there yourself. It was one of those nights where things really got on top of me and I was so hungover the next day. And the first food picture that I saw, this is always what happens. The first food picture that I saw, it is my ultimate mission to eat that food that day. So I wake up, I'm scrolling through Instagram, and my friend Ariel had just made some homemade fried rice and had put an egg on it. And so I went to the store, I bought all the stuff for fried rice, which takes a while. You got to make the rice and then let it cool down and trick it into thinking that it's days old rice by putting it in the fridge and everything. I had to, cook up some chicken. The whole process, probably, I was starving, but I refused to snack ahead of time. I just had this meal in my head. So I made all the chicken fried rice. I got some eggs. I successfully cooked them like over medium or maybe even over easy, which is hard for me to do to not break the yolks. I got me some Portuguese sausage. And like there were so many times in making this meal that I wanted to snack on something, maybe cut up a vegetable, eat it a little bit. But I was like, no, the longer I wait, the better this will be. So finally, it was probably like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm finally sitting down to my Hawaiian breakfast that it took me hours and hours to make. And I'll tell you what.
Aloha.
It means hello, and you're eating too much, Andrew, because I horfed that down. But it was worth it. Usually, I don't have that self-control, and it's probably not even good. You shouldn't starve yourself to then eat a huge meal later, but good Lord, it paid off.
And then, so it's just a giant pile of rice with Portuguese sausage in it, and then are the over-easy eggs on top of the rice, or are they mixed in?
Yeah, so on top. So in the chicken fried rice, in the actual recipe, there's a little bit of egg, you know, just for consistency.
Right. Oh, but there's chicken in there, too.
And I cut up the chicken really small, so it's a very small diced chicken, about the size of the peas and the carrots. I got to say, the rice came out perfectly. That's how I say it, perfectly. And then I fried up a couple of eggs and just kept them, you know, as soft as possible so that the yolk would kind of drip into the... Into the rice, because I serve the eggs.
Where's
on top
the
of
chicken
rice.
Come from? Is it like just a chicken breast from the deli? Did you have to cook that too?
Yeah, that's what it took me a while too. So I get these really thin sliced chicken breast fillets, so you can just kind of flash fry them pretty quickly. But I had to marinate them first too. So while I was boiling the rice and then trying to trick the rice into thinking it was older than it actually was, I was then marinating and cooking the chicken up as well. I hate to trick rice, but it was a good cause.
Yeah, well, it had it coming. Yeah, see, there you go. Me, I wake up, I have that thought in my head. Beeline for the Chinese restaurant.
I usually do that. That's why. See, that's the thing. I think you have a more impressed... Maybe impressed is the wrong word. I think you think that I'm more culinarily creative than I actually am, because on the rare occasion that I do something like this, I tell you about it. You know, usually on a big hangover day, I go and actually get... That's one of the rare times I just straight up get a fast food burgers. What does he say in that drop we use? This McDonald's fast food burger.
McDonald's hamburger?
Yeah.
Talking about Seymour Skinner or Mitt Romney?
Oh, I was talking about the fake Mitt Romney one. Steamed hams is the Seymour Skinner one.
Yeah, that's a Utica thing. I think you have a better... here's what I think. I think because you tend to downplay things and related to your skills and abilities, I think that you wouldn't describe yourself as somebody who's a great cook. But not just like other random things that I bring up, I'll be like, oh, I cook this, and you'll be like, oh, yeah, we like to do that sometimes. Here's what we do. Like, I think that you... because of your love of puttering and eating and being indoors, it really brings together three things that you've really built your life around: being reclusive, puttering, and eating. And so I think that leads you to actually be probably a pretty good cook.
This is such a horrible thing to admit right now, but you know it. You know this is true. You can relate to it to a degree.
You know
but
it, baby.
You know it, you know it, baby. But Genevieve is going away on kind of a long weekend. She's going on a camping trip this weekend, so I'm going to have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights to myself. I would like to reiterate one more time: there is never anything that Genevieve kind of prevents me from doing, with the possible exception of getting certain ingredients on pizzas. And even that, she doesn't care if I order another pizza with my stuff on it. Like, Genevieve does not get in the way of my lifestyle at all. Yet I am so damn excited to have these three nights of just like bachelor dumb, and it never makes sense. We already talked about this the other day, didn't we? I don't know why, but like, I'm looking forward to doing nothing. Like, I am so excited to do literally nothing. I'm wondering if it's just because like there won't be somebody around. Even though Genevieve does not judge me, or at least does not openly judge me, maybe I feel like I'm being judged when I don't leave the apartment for 4 days. I don't know what it is psychologically, but I am so excited for my bachelor weekend, as pathetic as it's going to be.
Oh, man. I get that. I think I have exactly the same relationship with being here at Burbank Springs by myself. you know, and just knowing that I can watch whatever TV I want to watch. Again, all the stuff you said about Genevieve totally applies to Carrie, in that she's fine with whatever and not like some heavy. But and the other irony is that when she's gone, like she was actually gone last night. She was working in Seattle and stayed over. She's working there today. I'm on the couch usually, like on my laptop, texting her saying I miss her.
Yeah,
as I'm watching my terrible shows.
Yes.
So it's you know, it's like I miss her, and I would be very sad if this was my norm, if this was my everyday life. But there is also just a nice feeling of just not having to factor anyone's interest in except yourself on any level, to just be like watching whatever lousy TV you want to. I watched like 4 episodes of My 600-Pound Life last night. That would not fly if Carrie was sitting on the other side of the couch. Like, she'd be like, come on, let's do something else. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
That kind of thing. And again, like, I don't have to, like, I could watch TV in my office if we wanted to watch different things. I joke around about not being allowed to watch the Olympics here, but I could have watched them if I wanted to. But, you know, it's just like, well, I'd rather just sit in the room with Genevieve and just watch whatever's on, you know? And so it's not like I'm under her thumb or anything, but it's also, you don't have to necessarily, like, whatever you want to watch, you want to watch. Like, I'll probably watch more ESPN, and I don't even watch ESPN, but like, or just like, or news shows, frankly, because Genevieve consumes so much news during the day that she doesn't really want to kind of watch the news at night, which is what I like to do. There also, though, you hit on something. If I can get real for 1 second, I'm going to float a trial balloon here. You tell me if it's relatable or not. And if not, I'll cut it out because it sounds really pathetic. You just mentioned that half the time when you're having one of your looked forward to bachelor times, half the time you're texting Carrie or thinking about Carrie and how much you miss her anyway. I almost wonder if that's part of it, because I know that feeling. Like, I'm looking forward to this weekend, and it's going to be like, wow, I can do whatever I want. And I'll start probably by playing Madden, you know, like I'll just play Madden on the TV. Nobody's watching TV. That's great. But then, like, not long into it, you start thinking like, oh man, what would it be like if I didn't live with Genevieve? Just like a small part of your brain. I'm not saying like you obsess over, but just a small part of your brain has this almost, I don't know if it's a kind of adolescent or maudlin sort of fantasy of just like, oh, this would be really sad if this were my life. And that's part of the thing too, right? Can you relate to that well, or am I cutting this out?
You're not cutting this out, because I think what you've hit on is an essential component of this, which is it's fun to be on your own for you and I. Everybody's wired differently. Everybody gets to do what they want to do. But I think it's fun to kind of have your night to yourself, because you're not having your night to yourself 7 nights a week. And in fact, you know that Genevieve is coming back from the camping trip, and I know that Carrie's coming back from Seattle today. And so it's a fun change of pace. But if you lived by yourself and if you were felt lonely all of the time, it would be a really bummer feeling. Don't you think that's part of it?
I think that maybe that is part of it. I mean, I've often said, and Genevieve and I kind of get into good-hearted debates about this. As a matter of fact, you've probably, I'm shudder to think you've probably been there for them. But pardon me, Genevieve has this whole theory that, like, if I, you know, if she and I broke up, I would very quickly just kind of end up with somebody else, which is the complete opposite of how I see myself. Like, I honestly, truly believe I am with Genevieve because Genevieve is special. I'm not saying that to sound romantic. I'm being serious. I like being alone too much. I don't think that if something happened to Genevieve and me or our relationship or what have you, that I would quickly be searching to bring somebody else in my life, because I don't need people in my life. That sounds like an asshole thing to say, but I don't have a huge thirst or desire for that when I'm alone. I think that Genevieve did something to, you know, just by being Genevieve, I just really freaking fell for her and fell for her in a way that I've never felt like, you know, that towards anybody else before. And that's why we're together. So and part of it is I would be super sad if Genevieve didn't come home. But I truly believe that if it weren't for Genevieve, I probably would live alone, and I don't think I would necessarily be lonely, you know?
But it would be in a mountain cabin, and you would be the Unabomber.
Does it have electricity? Like, that's the thing. Like, I'm a recluse, but I'm a recluse because, like, I like, you know, my video games and my boop boops.
You need to be able to play Madden.
Right. I just downloaded Civilization 6, too, by the way.
OMG.
What do you say?
Because you and I have a little recording planned on Sunday afternoon. And it was kind of funny because you and I were like trying to figure out how we're going to do this. And you were basically like, yeah, but you need to be here by 4.
Yes.
Because I need to, we need to have that out of the way early so I can have my last, I can fully lean into my last bachelor night. And I don't want the leaning in to start too late.
I know we're going on for a long time, but let me know if you associate with that at all, because that is something about me that is a really bad trait, and I don't know if other people have it as much, because I know for a fact Genevieve doesn't. Like I said, yeah, let's try to make it no longer than 4, because I have no problem dedicating 2 hours of recording TBTL with you. And you would think, well, if those 2 hours start at 6, well, then I can just play my video games and stuff beforehand. And then we'll start at 6. But I hate waiting. I hate anticipating something. That's why I hate having social engagements on a Sunday night. Because then I feel like my whole Sunday is waiting to get to the social engagement. Want to do it earlier and then be done with everything, so I don't feel like I have to talk to anybody later.
100%. And let's not leave out probably the role that alcohol plays in this.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's probably part of it.
I mean, genuinely, it's like when it's time for the relaxing, like I've never been the kind of person who could like go have like a drink at lunch, you know, like have a glass of wine with my lunch and then go back to being productive and working. To me, it's either like we're not drinking or we are and we're blowing off the rest of the day. Because
so bad. It's so bad, though.
But there are a lot of non-drinking, you know what I mean? That's also a thing, which is like, I feel very comfortable and capable of just like not getting into it because I know that this is not the time to get into it and because I need to go be productive. Like, I don't have any problem recognizing that reality mm-hmm. too. But for me, yeah, the majority of the fun is anticipating the moment where I can start the relaxing and there's nothing coming in between me and the relaxing until it's time to go to bed and get mm-hmm. up. And then have it be the next day. Like, if there's anything that feels like a responsibility or an appointment, the relaxing cannot begin. And there's no like, yeah, I'm just going to play Madden from 1 till 3, and then my Madden time will be over, and then it'll be time to record TBTL. It's like, no flipping way. I totally get it. Like, once TBTL's done, and then it's like, get out Civilization 7 or whatever you're on, and just let's just see where this takes us. Knowing that you can just follow your heart for the rest of the night, that's a good feeling.
Oh, speaking of, I have something very timely to play here.
You know, people think I'm fancy, but I like nothing more than to end the day with one of these fine hamburger sandwiches from the good people at the McDonald's.
And there you have it.
Can I throw one at you that I've been sitting on for mm-hmm. a while since we were talking about toilets?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know this kind of stuff. For me, a bathroom is just a library with a cold seat.
So there you go.
Wait, hold on. Let's just go. You can tell.
Do it.
We got all of our meetings done early. We don't have anything else going on.
I was in a friend of mine's car. It's a Chrysler that talks to you. And it says, the door is ajar.
I think that's literally it. And then he just makes a face like, America, crazy.
We don't want to go out with me playing Right Way to Rock on guitar, do we? Because I just did find the chords.
Wait, and you have your guitar there?
It's in the other room, but just give me 30 seconds.
All right.
All right, I'm a little out of breath. I did run. And this guitar is super out of tune.
You could have taken your time, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
That
Do we have to
G.
listen to you tune it?
No, I'm not going to tune it.
You're just going to play it like that. Oh, God.
There's a right way to rock. There's a wrong way to roll. I'm playing the actual chords. G, C, E. You know what? Here's what we'll do.
It's really out of tune, though.
How about I just play the guitar part? So that was good.
That was really good. It sounded like the original.
So that was 100% worth it for everyone.
I thought it was good. It was nice to hear some acoustic music, even if it wasn't exactly my favorite song. I'll bet you David from the basement's been playing your guitar. Little brother's getting in your stuff. Stay out of my room,
man.
David.
God, I'm going to tell my mom.
You should.
Okay. I have a couple of possible show titles. Do you have any written down?
I wrote down one. I wrote down, cut out the part where you talk about missing Genevieve. Okay.
Endearing.
I'm just joking. I did.
Don't cut that out.
I just wrote.
Also, you need to start lining your next girlfriend up now in case something does happen. And those kinds of comments are exactly the kind of thing that will line your next girlfriend up.
No, I want to be alone. Why won't everybody just leave me alone? All I wrote was, and this came from your intro. This is a long, long time ago now. Live not so quite Moss. I thought that was kind of funny. What did you have?
I have The Unfunny Valley.
I kind of like that.
And Uncork, Sip, Guzzle, Recork.
That's kind of funny.
To drinking sodas.
But Unfunny Valley really sounds like a show title to me, so I think we should go with that.
Okay. And then did you have a song idea? Because I had a...
Do it.
A little something that I thought we could throw down. Our friend, the Stewbot... sent us an email, you and me, about a little music suggestion. Now, it's going to take me a second to search for his emails. And he doesn't show up in my email as Stu, but you know what I'm talking about?
Well, he definitely was making a joke about a mashup of an MGMT/REM song.
Yeah, that one. But he also was suggesting, dang it, he was suggesting a song that he is really loving right now.
It was definitely an email?
It was, yeah, because then he texted me about it and said, I sent you an electronic message. This is.
Oh, I know. Yes. You know what? It was on Friday. He said, have you guys picked music for your weekend yet? I said, you know what? Yeah. Luke handles that. Email him directly and maybe you can slip in that way. And so I never knew what the song was because he just went directly to you.
Yeah. Well, now for some reason, I can't find. Stu, re-email me the song and we'll play it tomorrow.
Do you want me to call him? That too involved?
Probably.
Let me just do it. I'm just going to do it on my cell phone. Okay. See if we can make this happen.
Just jamming out over here.
What are the laws about recording people without their knowledge in this state?
If it's Stu, it's okay.
Afternoon. This is Steve.
Hello, Stewbot. This is Andrew Walsh. And just for the record, you're being recorded right now.
Oh, boy. What's going on?
We're recording TBTL. Luke can hear you, but you can't hear him because of the headphone situation. But we need music to go out with, and you had emailed Luke some song, but we can't find it now.
Oh, okay. I emailed him. It's the new Janelle Monáe single.
Oh, okay. Yes. Do we know the name of it?
It's called Make Me Feel.
Okay, I do love some Janelle Monáe. All right, Make Me Feel. Okay, we will take it from there. I would keep you on the line, but since you and Luke can't talk directly to each other, I should probably just let you go
ask
now.
Ask him one thing, Andrew. Ask him how he feels about the Vikings letting all their quarterbacks go so they can try to get Kirk Cousins.
Oh, shoot. He hung. He thought I was going. I was trying to listen to you. He was trying to talk to me. And
that's fine.
Then
that's
he
fine,
hung
sure.
up. Yeah, sorry. Anyway, sure, so, okay, make me
correspond
feel.
Correspond with me.
But he did. I'm sure he'll go back and listen to this now, and he will answer your question via voicemail. 206-414-8285 is the voicemail number for everybody. All right.
By the way, was that weird to hear him answer the phone as Steve?
Yeah, a little bit. It always takes. Yeah,
I forgot his name is Steve.
I had to change him in my Google contacts because my Google contacts mean I look for you on my phone, or if I'm starting to type your name into an email, all of that good stuff. I was always having to look for Steve or typing in Steve, and it always take my brain a couple of jostles to remember. I was typing in Stu and not Steve, etc. So I just changed him to the Stewbot in my phone. He's just officially Stewbot to me.
Did you know Tim and Eric have a song called Wild Hogs 2?
No, let's listen.
And the lyrics are, I just heard the news today, there ain't going to be a Wild Hogs 2, and it's making me wonder if I want to live. Maybe I should think about packing it in. I'll miss them riding their Harley Davidsons. It's making me worry about the status of Old Dogs 2. I am looking... I'm going to look that song up and listen to it and learn how to play it on guitar and really dazzle you tomorrow.
I guess I won't play it now. I've extended the show too many times, but if you're going to go down this hole, Luke, check out, you know, Tim Heidecker also has this character called Decker, who I don't even know how to begin to describe what's going on with that thing. But check out the song Decker. Our values are under attack. It's it's pretty good.
What I don't understand is I'm looking around for Tim and Eric and their Wild Hogs 2 song, and like I can't seem to find it. But what I can find are the chords everywhere, which makes me wonder, did they just like write out the chords and lyrics for a song that doesn't exist about them being sad that Wild Hogs 2 didn't get picked up?
Here, I think I have it. Hold on. Is this him or is this Janelle Monáe?
I don't know.
There ain't gonna be a Wild Hogs 2. And no matter how hard I pray, there ain't gonna be a Wild Hogs 2. And it's making me wonder if I want to live. Maybe I should think about packing it in. I'll miss them riding on their Harley Davidson.
Now that's somebody who tuned their guitar before
yeah,
playing.
Yeah, it is.
I admire that.
It's making me worry about the status of all those two. Well, they better hurry and start.
I didn't even know about Old Dogs. John Travolta, Robin Williams, Walt Disney movie?
Yeah.
When you know the first ones, they could not be beat. When you got Travolta, you know you got the heat. But a guy's dream would have been so neat.
That's beautiful.
That's really good.
Good stuff. All right. Well, this has been a very weird last 35
Super
minutes of the show.
Weird.
And I guess we're now at the end of it. So thank you for listening, everybody. We're going to go with this Janelle Monáe song recommended by Steve. we'll be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Can't be explained, but I can try for you. Yeah, baby, don't make me spell it out for you. You keep on asking me the same questions. Why? And second guessing all my intentions. Should know by the way I use my compression that you got the answers to my confessions. It's like I'm powerful with a little bit of tender. No sexual bender. Mess me up, yeah, but no one does it better. There's nothing better. That's just the way you make me feel.
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 So good, so fucking real. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
You know I love it, so please don't stop it.
You got me right here in your jean pocket, right now. Laying your body on the shag carpet. Oh, you know I love it, so please don't stop it. It's like I'm powerful with a little bit of tender. An emotional sexual bender. Mess me up, yeah, but no one does it better. There's nothing better. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
Power out.